All right, everybody. Welcome to No Notes, show with no research, no notes, just guys talking. Matt Verderam is here. If you have if you've kept up with anything that I do over the past, I don't know how long, you know who Matt is. You were, and for anybody who doesn't listen to the Pump Fake, you know, you've been on the show a trillion times. For the past like 5 years, you have been a mainstay of anything that I do. So I appreciate that, first of all. But how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm looking forward to the rest of the summer before the NFL season begins with training camp the last week of July, and just trying to relax a little bit, do some more featurey type stuff before we get into the season. And once we do, pretty much sell my soul to the football gods for the next 9 months or so.
I saw that you tweeted you sold your soul to another type of football gods. You're coaching your daughter's soccer team. How's that going?
I am. Good. We had a game tonight. We had a game yesterday. We have a game tomorrow. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, it's backed up because of the weather out here. It's been so hot. They've had to cancel some of these games. But, yeah, tomorrow night's the last night of the season. She's enjoyed it. She's had fun. It's a good group of kids. They're 4 and 5 years old, so it's like 12 kids.
Is this her first year playing then?
Yeah, she's 4. Okay. So it's been good. She's enjoyed it. Her favorite part about it is that she gets a snack. But you know, she enjoys it nonetheless, and it's fun. It's refreshing to watch people just play sports because they enjoy them and not because they're getting paid or worried about getting a scholarship or anything like that. It's cool to be a part of it.
Did you play soccer when you were younger?
I did. I played soccer from age 5 to about age 16.
You played that long? Wow.
I did. I played in high school.
I did not know that.
It's not a well-known fact, but I did. I was when I was younger, I was a goalie, and if I can say so, a pretty damn good one. And then I got older, and I got sick of just being in the net all the time. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go up and be a striker, because you know, midfield, that's a death sentence. You got to run all over creation. I'm not built for that. I got into playing goalie because I like being able to punt the ball out of there, because I was like, well, that's kind of like football. And then I was like, you know what? I want to be a striker because I can kick. I'm not gonna outrun anybody. There's no razzle dazzle. I can just power the ball. So I did that. I played youth soccer, and then I played modified and JV and varsity. And then I finally gave it up because it got to a point where I was playing hockey so much that it just kind of I couldn't play on both and give the time I needed to. And I like soccer. I never loved soccer. I just did it because our team was good when I was younger and it was fun and, you know, whatever. But it was good. It was a fun time.
Yeah, you briefly mentioned the hockey thing to me. That was a while back, like during a phone conversation. And you said that you fucking loved hockey. I would love to see you in your prime. You were a center, right?
I was. I was a center and I was a right winger, depending on the line and the alignment. But yeah, I played just for fun as a kid, like on ponds when I was starting about 4 or 5 years old. And then I went all the way through high school. Same type of deal, JV, varsity. I was the fun fact. I was the captain of my senior team. It was fun. I loved it. I was never a huge goal scorer. I was more of an assist guy. I was more of a defensive type forward, but I loved hockey. Easily my favorite sport to play. Then, now, forever. I think hockey's the most underrated sport there is in this country.
Like, I can agree with you on that.
People who don't like hockey don't watch hockey.
It's a good sentence.
I don't know that many people who are like, you know what, I really gave hockey a shot for a month and hate it. Like, it's an easy sport to learn. There's not a whole lot of, you know, like, there's no, like, look, football's hard as hell to learn, right? Yeah. Like, there's so many different things. Basketball is a simple sport to learn. Baseball is a simple sport to learn. Hockey is in that same vein. Like, there really is not that much you need to learn. Okay, icing, offsides, whatever. It's not that complicated. And I will die on the hill if there is no sport that has a better playoffs. None. It is easily the best playoffs. I will fight anyone to the death who says otherwise.
Yeah, no, especially this past year. I mean, we got Edmonton and Calgary, which is a fun series. And then even in the final, you know, Colorado controlled most of it. You know, Tampa Bay had their moments, but good Lord, the Colorado Avalanche are fun to watch play hockey, are they not?
They're great. They're great. Guys like Cale Makar, Darcy Kemper was always kind of maligned in net, but he ended up playing really well, say, for one game in the final. And you know, they have a million guys up front, Landeskog and Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen and all these guys. The thing that's great about hockey too is like the people who do love hockey that like go to these games are insanely into it. So the crowds are just unbelievable. Like you mentioned Calgary and Edmonton, the Battle of Alberta. Like you watch one of those games, you can't like get into that. You don't have a pulse. Like those fans are just unbelievable. And you like, and then you get these dopes who are like, well, there's, you know, I don't know. I don't think there's that many fans for hockey. Turn on one of these games, like the stadium's packed, and then outside in Toronto, there's 40,000 people watching a board, like drinking Molson. I mean, go show me a Memphis Grizzlies playoff game that there's 40,000 people outside of the arena watching the game. Like it's nuts. The hockey's great too, because hockey also, like as someone, you know, I mean, I only played in high school, I didn't play beyond that, but I broadcasted our college team, and they won the national championship my freshman year. And I got to know a lot of those guys, became friendly with some of them. The fun thing about that sport is you can be the nicest guy in the world off the ice, and you can go on the ice, and you can legally punch somebody, and you get a five-minute penalty. You don't get charged with assault. Like, you can just go out and do whatever you want, and nobody thinks any worse of you. You know, especially in high school, right? Like, you can punch somebody in the – yeah, you have to have a cage. You can just, you can just keep punching. I mean, you're kind of a moron if you do it. You might break your hand, but hockey's great. Hockey – look, it's a hard sport to play if you're not skating at a young age, because then it just becomes, you know, kind of clunky, and it feel like, you know, it's a lot harder to play that, I think, than it is to play basketball. Not to say it's easier to be an NBA player than an NHL player. I mean, when you're talking that level, it's ridiculously hard no matter who you are. But just to be a 10-year-old and start playing something, I think it's easier to just play baseball, play basketball. Hockey, it's too expensive for kids these days.
Yeah.
It's a hard. I mean, look, you got to pay for the ice time. You got, you know, a stick. My God, I went to Dick's Sporting Goods the other day to get my daughter her first hockey stick. I think it was like $75.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
Weighs like half a pound.
I was gonna say, did you get her like an actual like branded stick, like a Bauer or anything like that?
No, I ended up not getting the stick because it is insane. I went on Amazon and just got her like a Franklin, like a plastic Franklin for like $15, which is what it should be. But you know, even like when I played, I never took slap shots because I had two sticks that I brought to every game. They're the same stick. They're identical. And they were the old school. Like, they were wood. Like, for two reasons. One, if you slash somebody, you could kill them. Like, that was the last time they were going to hit you from behind. Okay, that was number one. Number two, they were cheap. And my father was just telling me, if you break one of these sticks, like taking a slap shot, you're going to buy another one with your own money. Well, I didn't have any money. I was like 14. So I got really good at taking wrist shots. But, yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. I'm right above my desk right now. I'm sitting there. I got my two high school jerseys framed above my. I loved it. If I could go back in time and do one thing for one day, it would be that. It would be playing in high school in front of a home crowd and kicking somebody's ass on a Friday night and then going out on a date. Like, that was awesome. Yeah, no responsibilities, and you just had to beg your parents for $20.
Do you still like occasionally hit the ice now, or do you think like you still skate pretty well?
I was all signed up for a league before COVID.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I still have all my stuff. I bought any equipment that needed to be replaced. I bought it a few years ago. My skates are still in perfect condition. I've had them for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I'll never get rid of them. I actually have been looking into getting back out there and playing in a league. I mean, I love it. I have no grand illusion. Like, I couldn't sign up and play with a league of guys like straight out of college. I think at 33, it's probably not going to happen. But I could probably play on like a B level at this point and go out and be pretty productive and pretty good. I'll tell you the truth. I was better at street hockey than I was at ice hockey. I was actually, that was the best sport I played. If there had been like college for street hockey, I would have been in business. Like, I could have done that somewhere, but unfortunately that's not the way it works.
No, it's not. I did play street hockey I wasn't in any like sort of league or anything, but that was just a thing where like the neighborhood kids gather and you just get a couple nets and play in the middle of the road. That was fun. I did do that for a long part of my childhood. I do miss that.
We used to, I was in a league when I was a kid. And we used to go to these things called NHL breakout tournaments, which were held all over the country. And if your team was good enough, if you were good enough, you got invited to these things. And, I went one year and I was a goaltender. And then as I got older, I became a forward. And so I went to a few of them. I still have my jersey somewhere. But, you know, for me being in New York, they were kind of like brought on by the Rangers. I remember one year we played at Rye Playland in New York, which is a big area. And then actually the second one, which is the coolest one, we played on the deck of the USS Intrepid, which is
a ship.
It's docked in New York City. We played right on the ship, and it's funny because the boards are—they're blown up essentially. They're inflatable boards. I remember early in one of the games, I took a shot and I hit off the crossbar, and the thing skewed off the top and went right into the ocean. You know, I mean, or the river, the Hudson River, whatever the hell it was. But yeah, it was. I guess it would have been the ocean. Yeah, it was funny. It was also interesting because the decks are lacquered; like you can't stop. So you go to stop, and you normally would on asphalt, you just go flying into the boards. But it was cool as hell, man. I remember like skating up and down Chelsea Pier, and I was probably right around 9/11, probably right before 9/11. So I was like 12, 13. Mm-hmm. It was fun. I mean, we had a blast. We had buddies in the team. That was fun. Like I remember when I was 12 or 13, I got to practice. You know, when I was in the league. My coach took myself and a few of the other kids, and we were like 12 or 13, and we got to practice against the 17, 18 year olds. And, we held our own. I remember thinking, this is pretty fun. But unfortunately, yeah, nobody's handing out a scholarship for street hockey. So it's where it ended, but it was great. I played yesterday. I was playing street hockey yesterday with my daughter, trying to teach her how to handle the ball and handle the puck. And, you know, and then, you know, I had fun. I'll flip up the puck and hit it like a baseball over the house and then bring it back. And then she tries to do it and she hit it right in the car. I'm like, so, but it's fun. So it's good. I'll take those dents.
That's fun. Yeah. No, I played basketball in high school, which, you know, looking at me, I know what you're thinking. Damn, those kids must have been horrified of you. And they were. They really were. Yeah. I didn't play a lot. I was the scrappy white kid on the end of the bench who got in to play defense and dive on loose balls.
Played in basketball. I played basketball in gym class. Like I could shoot, but that was it. I could shoot, but I couldn't rebound because I can't jump. Like you couldn't slip a credit card under my feet when I jump. I just can't do it. So I'm not fast. You know, that's why I really never played football. Like I just can't. I'm not fast at all. I'm the slowest person alive. So like for me, even when I was in really good shape in high school, I just could never run. I hated running. I've always hated running. That's why one of the reasons I love hockey, just skate. I mean, it kind of evens the playing field.
Yeah.
But I always just, as much as I love football, and I did play in like youth football, but I never played in high school or anything like that. I can't run. So that was kind of the end of the dream. And I like defensively, I had a buddy of mine went out for these. Why don't you play DN? Why don't you play? I'm like, all right. And I went out for it. And like the third practice, I'm lining up. And I forget who the hell it was, some kid I went to high school with, my left tackle. And he's like literally like frothing at the mouth. And I just busted out laughing and got killed because I just couldn't stop laughing. Like they snapped the ball and I'm still laughing at him. And I was like, nah, yeah, I'm good. I got hockey coming up in a month and a half. I don't need to get killed playing this. I'm not, this is not going to work. So hockey, played soccer. For a few years in the beginning, played baseball for a little bit. Loved baseball, but yeah, that was, you know.
If you're playing baseball, I never played baseball. That's like one thing I kind of wish I would have done because I feel like I could have been decent at that.
I took after my dad. I was a catcher, which at the time, I mean, now I was 6'2" then. I'm 6'2" now, but at the time I was a 195. Now I'm like 235 or something. But I wasn't as filled out. Now I actually look like I should play catcher. Then I should have probably played like right field. But I loved it. My dad was a catcher in high school for his team, and so I kind of followed suit. And he was one of the coaches in the team, and so I was a catcher, and it was fun. I liked it because you were involved in every play. You know, it was cerebral. You call pitches and, you know, you're involved in the defensive alignments and everything. And so I like that part of it. If I did it now, I wouldn't be able to get up with my, my knees. I would be locked in that position for a month. But it was fun. I loved hitting. I loved, you know, cranking an off-speed pitch that hung. It was fun. We had a good time. We had a good team. It was it was a good way to spend the spring.
You mentioned your dad, and I feel like you and I are cut from the same cloth in a sense where our dads influenced both of us and I think kind of influenced to want us to do this. Like for me, there's not really a plan B. I don't think there was really one for you either in terms of wanting to do what you do with your life. What's the best story that you have about your dad, whether it be involving, you know, watching football with him or, you know, something of that nature that kind of, you know, influenced or helped, you know, guide this?
Oh man. There's so many. You know, I think from a human level, he just really taught me how to be a dad. We lived in New York. He worked in New Jersey most of my upbringing until like the last couple of years of high school. He commuted an hour and 40 minutes each way every day. Through traffic and everything else. And some years the AC in the car worked and some years it didn't. Those years it didn't, well, you rolled down a window. He really was amazing in this sense. It still is, and thankfully still with us and doing fine. But he never missed a game. Like, and I mean ever. Like a T-ball game, a soccer game, anything. A youth football game, a hockey. He never missed a hockey practice. Like, there were a lot of nights we lived in a small town in New York. I mean, we lived an hour and 40 outside New York City, but it was a tiny, I graduated 43 kids. So I played essentially travel hockey. I didn't have a high school team. I played travel. So he would come home, hour 40 to work, hour 40 back. He'd pick me up. Mind you, I could drive. He just wanted to go. He wanted to be there. So he would pick me up, drive an hour and 5 minutes to the rink, and then come home. And we did that 3-4 nights a week.
Jesus.
For years. And hockey's not cheap. Like for anyone who plays hockey, that, you know, that was an expensive endeavor for a middle-class family. So he taught me just like, and that's, I think, why I like coaching my daughter's team and I like being involved. And I like, you know, I never want to miss a game of hers. I never want to miss a parent-teacher conference. I always knew how much it meant to me that he was in the stands. But I would say as far as like what I do for a living, you know, he's in construction. So he never, as much as he loves sports, he never went into that realm. He never was influenced by that in terms of his professional life. But he just always was really, you know, and my mother too, just always very supportive of, hey, look, if this is what you want to do, go for it. I did not want to be a sports writer. I wanted to be a play-by-play announcer. I went to school for that. And I got out of school and I got offered a job by the Tampa Bay Rays short season single A team. And it was like $8 an hour to call their games, right? And I took it. And then I had a buddy of mine who, I mean, it's a long story, but basically his father was an editor at a small paper in Massachusetts. So I'm like, hey, man, if you want, they need somebody to fill in for 4 months. The guy's on disability because he had to get his leg amputated because he had diabetes. Like, that's literally how my career started. And they're like, he'll pay $15 an hour. I'm like, sold, done. I moved into a Ramada Inn for 4 months and stayed. And I remember some nights talking to my dad. I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm watching high school girls basketball and track, and like, I don't understand what the hell's going on in track. I don't care. Like, you got to keep working at it. And I think probably just the support and the understanding of I watched my dad work every time I'd go with him in the summer to a job, you know, on Long Island, and he'd be working in the ceiling, the crawl space of a bowling alley in August, and it was 115 degrees. Oh. And his back hurt and his toenail fell off because he dropped a beam on his toe, but he couldn't stop working. So he just took his drill and put it through his toenail so the blood would drain. Like, so when I get annoyed when I go to events, NFL events, and people, you know, colleagues, whatever, complain about our job. It's like, are you kidding? Do you understand what we do for a living? Like, they pay us to watch football. How hard is that? That's nothing. Go do what he did for a week. See how much you complain then because some source didn't call you back on Tuesday and said he got to you on Thursday. So, yeah, I mean, there's a million things with my dad. You know, we've always watched football together. You know, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. I was at the game covering it. And he normally, he goes to bed usually fairly early. And I remember that night, he was like, call me when you're done working. And I was like, Dad, I'd love to. I'd love nothing more, but I'm going to be working. I'm going to be at the stadium until 2 o'clock in the morning. He's like, I don't care. Call me. I must have called him at like 2 a.m. and then 3 a.m. And he was just, he's like, I just watched the post game on NFL Network for the fourth time. That was a religious experience. It really was.
That's awesome. Now, so my dad, I will say, it was, how do I describe this? My dad, I get my temper watching football from my father. I know that for a fact. And I thought that was like normal as a kid, like being in like first, second grade, like watching games. My dad, like anytime like Ben would throw it and it would land at Antoine Randall's feet, just screaming, motherfucker, at the top of his lungs. Like I thought that was just, you know, what what dads would do. And so I feel like I've kind of picked that up. I've calmed down a little bit though, because like, I think it was 2 years ago, like pandemic year in 2020, like I was still in school. And so my roommates and a few other people were over. And I think it was like a game against like Houston or something. And they had fallen behind. Pittsburgh did. And I was just kind of in my way there. And every time I get like that, I shoot him a text. I'm just like, you realize what you've made me. You've made me like, people are afraid to be around me on Sundays. And I hope you know this. And he's like, all right, fuck them. And that's the text I get on that. Fuck them.
I was thinking about it. I guess, you know, it's funny. The year the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, which obviously for us is, I think, nothing could ever top that. And I know there's this weird thing in our business where it's like, well, you know, if you write about the league, you can't be a fan of a team. Fuck that. Okay. I got into the business because I love football. Yeah. And I grew up a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Now, I do believe when you write, when you report, when you deal with sources, you can't have bias. You have to set that aside or you're not doing your job. Yeah. But when I'm sitting in my office watching the Chiefs play a game on Sunday, yeah, you're damn right I'm rooting for the Chiefs. Like that. And if people can't deal with that, as your father would apparently say, fuck them. Like that, look, I don't care. And I think I'm in the unique position of people know that I'm a Chiefs fan because I came up covering them. So it was kind of like, it was made like I worked at Arrowhead Pride, Arrowhead Attic. Like it was evident. Now, yeah, I cover that league nationally. But like agents know that I refuse. She's like everybody know. Like it's not, but it's never impacted my work. So no one's ever cared. No one's ever not given me a scoop or something based off that. All that's a roundabout way of saying I remember the year, you know. So I moved to Chicago from New York, from where my parents live, the town my parents live. I moved here in 2015, and so it was right before the Chiefs got Mahomes a couple years before. And my dad and I watched every Chiefs game together. And so it was weird. Like moving out here, honestly, the hardest part was not watching the games with him. And, you know, we would text back and forth. Well, it just so happened the very end of that year, for one reason or another, and fans decided, God bless him for not firing me over this. But it became like when the Chiefs were on, like my dad, he called me once during the game. And we just stayed on the phone for the entire game. And that became a thing throughout like the remainder of the season where, you know, I'd be working, but he'd be on the phone. So like I'd be writing or I'd be editing or I'd be, you know, whatever. And he would like just be on speakerphone. We'd just be talking. And that has continued to this day. Like we just do that. It's never affected my work. Nobody seems to care. But I remember very distinctly the year they won the Super Bowl. Two things. The AFC playoffs. So they played Houston and they were down 24-0 in the second quarter of the game. Now, for people who are not Chiefs fans, for people like yourself who have rooted for a successful franchise most of your life, I can't explain to you how predictable it was that they were down 24-0 in a game they should have won by 100 points. Like, of course they were. Because people will forget. They were the 2 seed. Baltimore was the one. They were 14-2, the whole deal. But they lost the night prior. Tennessee beat them. So the Chiefs know their road. Like, all they've got to do is beat Houston and Tennessee at home, and they're in the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years. And the Chiefs start the game, and blow a coverage, 60-yard touchdown pass to Kenny Stills, punt blocked for a touchdown, Tyreek Hill muffs a punt, another touchdown, and then a field goal, and it's 24-0. And I forget if it was me or my father, but one of us just hung up the phone. Like, I think it actually was him. He's like, I can't take it anymore. I can't take this. They're killing me. I just, why do I do this to myself? Like, this effing team, this whole thing, right? So they're in commercial. And growing up in New York, I always listened to Mike and the Mad Dog on the radio and WFAN. And I remember when the Red Sox came back and beat the Yankees in 04, Chris Russo, Mad Dog, had this thing that he kept. He's like, sometimes, because you know they're not 3-0, it looks like they're going to get swept. And he's like, sometimes teams that are that tortured, like it takes the worst possible situation for them to finally break through for whatever the reason. Maybe it lifts pressure or whatever. And in that commercial break, I thought about that. And I called my dad back, and he was just getting ready to take a walk outside, which was January in New York. And I said, Dad, look, they're probably going to lose. This is terrible. This is the worst. Like, this is so bad. It's so embarrassing. They have Mahomes. They still can't get through this. But I said, you know, I was thinking about what Mad Dog said. Sometimes it really does take the worst moment. And like, as I'm saying that, Hardman runs a kickback like 60 yards. So we're sitting there watching the game over the phone together, and the Chiefs two plays in the end zone. Okay. Now we start talking. We're like, look, you know what? If they can just stop them and get the ball back and get to within 10 by halftime, like they get the ball coming out of half. Well, long story short, everybody who's a football fan knows what happened. And they rip off 28 points in the span of, like, in real time, like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I could live to be 180 years old. I will never have a more Nirvana-esque 20 minutes of my life than those 20 minutes. I remember texting people around the team after the game, like, when did you know you were going to win? And the unending response was, the second they faked the punt and didn't get it, we knew we were going to win. Mind you, the score was 24-7 at that point. And they were like, the game was done. We knew we were going to win. I remember that distinctly, that just staying on the phone through that and just being just disbelief. And the following week, they were up 28-17 in the AFC title game against Tennessee. There was maybe 7 or 8 minutes left. They have 3rd and 6 at their own 40. And the way the TVs were working, I was in the fan side office in Chicago. My dad was back home. His TV was literally like a quarter second, maybe a half second ahead of mine. So I don't know why we didn't sync it up, but we didn't. And if you remember the game, that play ended up being a 60-yard touchdown pass to Sammy Watkins. And it essentially sent them to the Super Bowl. And I just remember, like, I saw him throw the ball, but before the ball came down, from my eyes, my dad just started screaming. Like, and you know, it's one of those, like, you know, it's like a happy scream, like just screaming. And it was the coolest thing, because I knew before I even saw the ball come down, I'm like, they're going to the Super Bowl and I'm going to be there. This is like, I can't believe it. And then, yeah, of course, you know, they win, and it was, you know, it's something that, as long as I have my faculties, always remember.
So I remember, Super Bowl 40 was the first Super Bowl that I witnessed as like a Steeler fan. So I was in first grade at the time, and my dad watched it in a different room. He was just like so shaken. Like, my dad, so he grew up a Steeler fan, obviously. So he was old enough to see all four of them in the 70s.
Okay.
So this was the first time that they had been to one since 95, when O'Donnell threw those two loaves of bread to Larry Brown. So yeah, I mean, he was a little bit nervous. And so he watched it in a different room. And I remember when Antoine Randle threw the touchdown pass to Hines Ward. That, first of all, the game was horrible. Like, anybody who remembers,
that game was horrible. I do remember that. Yeah.
For anybody who remembers Super Bowl 40,
that game set football back about 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. No, it wasn't the best officiated game. It was a lot of turnovers. Ben went like 9 of 21. He threw 2 interceptions. It was horrible. Now,
they won.
They did. Willie Parker had a long touchdown run. It was great. Very euphoric. And I remember them running the reverse and Antoine Randle throwing the touchdown to Hines Ward. And I just hear like a small whoop from my, like a loud like screaming like, yeah. Like one of those.
Yeah.
And then like he came out with like his arms raised, because at that point it was pretty well like, if as long as they don't mess this up colossally, they're gonna win. And I remember like I was like 7. He like picks me up and like puts me in a bear hug and everything. That's like, that was one of my favorite favorite memories. And
you then can't, that kind of stuff, there's no price tag on it. You can't replace it. I, you know, obviously for me it's Super Bowl 54. I'm at the game and they were down 20-10. They have this comeback, and you know, I'm in the press box and I take that very seriously. Like I was not, there was no cheering. There was no like, look, I'm there to cover the game. And certainly internally I was dying. I mean, I wanted them to win so badly, but like I would never have shown that. And you know, Mahomes throws the second pick of the game and there's like 11 minutes left down by 10. And yeah, my dad just texted me, you know what? They had a great year, but it's just not their night. Like, yeah, I can't believe it. You know, they came all this way. They're going to lose to Jimmy Garoppolo. And, you know, and then of course, as it starts happening, I'll never forget it. They score with like 6 minutes left to get to within 3. And my dad texted me, and he is not, he's more like me after years of them beating him down emotionally. He's always more like, oh God, they're going to blow it. Texted me during the TV timeout. He was like, if they three and out them here, they're winning this game. And they three and outed them. And before Wisnowski could even punt the ball, my dad texted me, the game's over. Like, Mahomes is not losing this football game. And my mom and sister were watching the game with him, and they videotaped him when Damian Williams scored his touchdown to seal it. And it's just so funny because my dad is not an overly emotional person. Like, sometimes during sports he can be, but it takes like a moment for him. He's not going to go nuts in some game in like week 3. And when Damian Williams like turned the corner and my dad realized he was going to score, he just jumped out of his chair. Like, oh my God, it's finally going to happen. Like, he just lost his mind. It was like the dog ran away. Dog was terrified. Like, he just was going crazy. And you know, it was, yeah, it's, listen, to me, sports, like, you don't enjoy sports, at least I don't think many people do, unless you can share it with someone, whether it be a parent, a colleague, a friend, you know, a significant other, whoever. Like, the day that my dad's no longer with us, I don't know that I'll ever watch sports the same way. I won't enjoy them the same way. It won't mean as much. Who am I going to call and talk to him about? It's not – sports means so much to me because of the bond that you share with people over them. And with the Chiefs, look, there's a book that's on my bookshelf right now. It's called Maybe Next Year. And it was written by a man named, I believe his first name is Robert. His last name is Pearson. And he wrote this book in 2015. And he picked, I think it was like 13 or maybe 17 teams and universities that like have never won a title, or it's been forever. And the Chiefs were one of them. And somehow he interviewed me and my dad for this book. And
wow.
So actually, here, hold on.
Okay. This is actually pretty climactic. I'm excited to see this.
Okay. So his name's Greg Pearson.
Okay.
Book to the record if anybody ever wants to buy it, maybe next year. Great guy, nicest guy in the world. And so he interviewed my dad and I for it. We even got a little bit of camera time. And so, and there were a few other people he interviewed as well. The title of the chapter is Family Ties. And so,
wait, show me that picture of young Matt Verderam and your dad again.
Sure. Yeah, I was 5 in this picture. Now look at that.
That's great. Right.
The old man, he was crazy. In that picture, he's the age I am now. But, you know, it's funny, you know, the last words in the chapter were mine, which was nice of Greg. And I gave the quote, I think the losses have just bonded the fan base. With every loss, it just adds to the feeling that, hey, I've suffered through this. We're just hoping all the suffering will pay off in a glorious moment that everyone will remember forever. If you don't love sports, it's impossible to understand. If you look from the outside, you see the pain and suffering and the high blood pressure. But it has become a religion. I can't imagine not watching every Sunday. They can't do anything to shake us. And a couple of years later, they win the Super Bowl. And the first email I got was from Greg Pearson. So, good guy, good book, and good memory.
All the stories you've told me, that's definitely amongst amongst the favorite. That's great. I love that. Love that a lot.
Yeah, it was good. I think, you know, whenever I think of my dad, I think of sports. I mean, yeah, sure, there are other things that we've done, you know, and enjoyed, but like literally, like 95% of my memories of my father, either sports with me being like directly involved as a player, or you know, like we were talking about, I played baseball when I was in high school. And I had a walk-off grand slam one game. And I'm running around first base.
But that felt great.
It did. It was a 2-2 changeup. And the kid threw it down away. But I was able to just get around on it. And I just golf swinged it out the left field. And, you know, my dad was the first base coach. Like, he was just down there. And, you know, I could tell how excited he was. But he didn't want to show up. He didn't want to show up to our teams. He's like, let's get around the bases. Nice hit. You know, like it was cool. You know, I remember my senior year in the playoffs in New York State in hockey. Like we were playing a team. We were the sixth seed in the state. They were the third seed, and they'd beaten us in the regular season. And actually, in the newspaper the day leading up to the game, their head coach had made a comment, something to the effect of like, "Well, you know, when you know the Orange County team, which is our team, the Orange County, they're a good team, but you know, they're going to be a really good test for us to get ready for John Jay the following night." And it's a single elimination game. So obviously in his head, like they've already won the game. Mm-hmm. I've never enjoyed kicking someone's ass more in my life. You know, our coach is from Brooklyn, Al Trezza, love him. It was like a second father to me in a lot of ways. And he put that comment up in the locker room for the game. He was like, "We, you know, if you have any pride, if you have any guts, you're gonna go out there and steamroll them in this game." And we beat him 7-3. It wasn't even that close. It was 7-1 after two periods. We just rolled them out. We scored two goals the first minute of the game. And and the place was going nuts. I mean, we had a ton of fans at the game. And I'll never forget it. It was like the last minute and a half, 2 minutes of the game. We're getting ready for a face-off down the offensive zone. And I can't remember. I think it was actually – I was a wing. I was a right wing because I was lined up looking at the glass. And I was looking through the glass, and my dad was – sitting there like right even with me, and he just kind of gave a little, you know, a little thumbs up, and it was such validation. I remember I was the captain, so I was the last in the handshake line, and the coach was behind me, and so I'm shaking hands. You know, we get to the coach, I didn't say anything, I just shook his hand, and our coach was like, "Hope you enjoyed that fucking game, enjoy the tune-up." And guy, what do you say, guy? And it was a great moment. But yeah, it's just stuff like that you always remember, you know, because of who you shared it with, not necessarily because of what happened.
My father has shared, like, I've gotten to share a lot with him, like, because, you know, he ushered me into like being a Penguins fan too. So I mean, I've got to share 3 Stanley Cup wins with him too, and it doesn't get old. Like, those moments never, they don't dawn on, like, it's always special. And I remember the last one that they won. It would have been like my senior year in high school, I think. And I actually moved in with him that year because my parents are split. And so I moved in with him my senior year. And I don't know. I'm not going to dive into the tribulations of my teenage years, but it had been a long year for both of us. And having that moment when I think it was Patrick Hornquist scored with less than a minute left against Nashville. And they won 1-0. And I just, it was like 10:30, 11:30 at night somewhere in there. And he just starts like quietly celebrating because he didn't want to wake up my brother. And we're just going like quietly insane. And that's one of my favorites when I think of him. He's not an overly emotional guy. He's become more emotional though with age is what I've noticed. My father's definitely opened up more. Like he tells me he's proud of me a lot more now than he did when I was younger. I don't know if that's just because like he knows it means more to me now, but I've definitely noticed that with age he's expressed his feelings a little bit more. And I got to be the best man at his wedding, actually. It was 2 months ago, and to like see that part of him was actually, it was really cool, man. I like seeing those things. Yeah.
No, that's great. That's my dad was always pretty good about that kind of stuff. You know,
really?
He loved us, he's proud of us. Yeah, I mean, myself, my sister.
I don't want to make it sound like my father. Like, he never said he loved me. He was just a dick. No, it was nothing like that.
But you know, my dad, he's just well-rounded. Like, there were also times that, like, you know, he would you know, grab me by the face mask in hockey or something. Like, hey, stop whining or whatever. You know, if I was like 9 years old and complaining, like, stop. You're an embarrassment. Stop. You know, but no, you know, it's, I can't complain, man. I also was just really lucky. I had a lot of friends in high school who their parents were like second and third and fourth sets of parents. Like, I always feel so bad for kids. It's like, they always feel, you know, it's like, yeah, my mom wasn't really around because she had to work or whatever, or she, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, like, my dad wasn't around. I always feel awful for people like that. Awful. Because for me, I was so fortunate in that regard. I was a complete opposite. I had like parents on parents. Like, I, you know, I had so many friends in high school that there, and a lot of them, for whatever the reason, like, their parents were just, they were just tough. Like, that was one thing I'm thankful for. As much as I love my parents, I don't think they ever instilled toughness, because they didn't, like, it wasn't that our lives were necessarily easy. It certainly weren't hard. It was middle class all the way, but it was, I had a lot of friends who weren't as fortunate, and I would spend, you know, in the summers, like, weeks at their house. And I just remember, like, it was a different mentality. It wasn't like, oh, what would you like for dinner? It's like, you're getting bologna. That's what you're getting for dinner. And if you don't like it, you can go fuck yourself. Like, literally. Like, that was, I remember my one buddy, like, they would always have us, like, splitting wood, because, like, that's how they'd heat the house in the winter. And it was like, you're going to stay here. You're going to split wood. And you're going to, you know, whatever, however many cords. And, you know, it was fine. Never bothered me or anything. I was happy to do it. But it's just, I was always really fortunate that way. My best friend then and now, I mean, to this day, he's the best man at my wedding. He's a police officer in New York, and his father was an NYPD officer, and his grandfather was an NYPD officer, and so was my grandfather, actually. But that's neither here nor there. But the point being, like, I mean, it was totally different. Like, it was a dynamic when you'd spend time down there, where it was very loving, but it was like tough love. It was, yeah, you know, I remember, like, we would play wiffle ball in the yard. And one time we decided, like, we're done playing wiffle ball. We're going to play soccer. Well, my best friend, his younger brother, who's also a great friend of mine, a couple years younger than me, kicks the ball, puts it right through a window. Right through a window. Now, if that happens in my house, like, don't get me wrong, I'm getting yelled at. I'm in trouble. Like, there's no doubt. Like, I'm not trying to say this to my parents. My parents have been furious. But, like, you know, his father comes out and, like, is annoyed, but he's just more like, well, I guess you're going to learn how to replace a window. And it must have been, like, 1:30 in the morning. It was in the summer, so it was, you know, it was warm out. 1:30 in the morning, and we're all, like, there outside, like, idiots, trying to, like, figure out how to, like, fit this window. Of course, we had no idea how to do it, but he was going to, like, make us sit there all night and try to figure out how to put this window in. I remember another time they had a bee's nest. Like, it was a little bit of, I think it was a wasp nest, and it was up hanging off the gutter, but it was high. It was high up. So we had to get on a ladder. It was like a, you know, whatever, 20-foot ladder. Uh-huh. And, you know, his mother, who I won't name, it was like, go up there and knock it down. And I'm like, you know, I got to tell you, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, I don't like him buzzing around. I want to be able to enjoy my pool time. You know, I just go up there and knock it down. I'm like, I don't think they like that. She said, I don't give a shit if they like it. Go up there and knock it down. So my buddy and I, they had two 20-foot ladders at the house. Why? I have no idea. We each go up on ladders.
Big wrestling fans to me.
We're both in, like, we also played high school hockey together. That's how we met. So we both have, like, hockey helmets on, hockey sticks. We got, you know, WD-40 because, yeah, they kill bees, supposedly. And we're up there, like, two morons. We were probably 18 years old, trying to knock this thing down. And we're trying to, like, smack the nest into the wall so it kills the – well, of course, none of those things happen. We infuriate him with WD-40. They all come flying out of the nest. We're all like, we're trying to, like, scramble down. We're in our hockey equipment, so we're not getting stung to death. And like, my buddy's like, bees, we're coming down the ladder, you know. And like, we get on the ground and we're both like wailing at each other with hockey sticks, trying to. It was just, he's like, you're both idiots, you're never going to go to college. Like, it's just, you know, but like, that was growing up, and it was fun. But I can't be more thankful to everybody who was involved because they all kind of had a part in it one way or the other. And I would definitely not be who I am, better or worse, without all of them. They all factored in.
Yeah, no, I mean, my best friend's parents helped raise me in a lot of ways, and I absolutely would not be anywhere I am either without him, his parents, his family. Like, they become my second family, and I'm incredibly grateful for that too. But yeah, you hitting somebody with a hockey stick, yelling bees at the top of your lungs, puts a.
It looked like if you've ever seen Tommy Boy when they get out of the car.
Yeah.
Except there actually were bees. That's what. But just picture two morons and like hockey gear. It was insane. It was not our finest moment. We were like 17, 18 years old, and that was our answer to it. Cause we're like, well, they're going to sting us like crazy. Like, I don't want to get 20 foot on a ladder, getting stung to death. Ah, just get up there. Come on. I'm like just call an exterminator. No, I'm not spending $50. You know, like, right, thanks. You're going to get stung to death, but all right, let's go up there. You know, and it was, but yeah, I, you know, looking back at stuff like that, you know, it was fun. We had a great time. I wouldn't change anything. I mean, there were a lot of funny moments like that. We also, you know, we worked with his mother in the summers and stocking shelves because it's, I mean, man, we could have a 4-hour podcast based off of some of the crap that, I mean, just because his.
You've told me a little bit about it in other conversations that I remember.
I mean, my buddy Mike, he's fairly prized. I don't want to use the last name, but he's one of four siblings. Mm-hmm. So he and his older brother and his younger sister all worked this grocery stocking route because it was like filling in for a vendor. So we'd go and stock like McCormick spices, you know, or Nabisco product, whatever the hell. And we worked together in the summer. We worked with his mother. Well, to save on the gas, we were 18 and broke. Like, we would all drive with her. And she took this job like it was like holding the nuclear codes. It was the most serious thing she'd ever done in life. She was a retired EMT from New York City. Like, you think she'd relax after that, right?
Yeah. No.
Took this job super serious. Well, we couldn't have taken it any less seriously. I mean, who cares? You know, you're stocking freaking Hungry Man dinners. Like, who? I mean, even the grocery departments don't care. So we didn't care. And that was always a source of friction. And there was always something. There was always. I remember one time, I guess the statute of limitations run out at this point. Like, so we're trying to stock these McCormick spices, and she had to do something at some other part of the store. So she leaves my buddy and I and his brother, the three of us, to stock these shelves. Well, we did it. We did exactly what we're supposed to do, but we had what's called overstock, essentially just leftover spices, right? So we do just what we're supposed to, label them, we put them into the back, and then, of course, at the end of it, You throw out all the empty cardboard boxes. You have the, if you've ever worked at a supermarket, ever been with one, like, they have a big baler in the back, whatever. So we do it. Well, we screwed up one of the boxes. One of the boxes wasn't empty. It was stocked with like 24 McCormick, like garlic powder spices. And throw it in the baler, turn the baler on, thinking it's empty. Well, it's not empty. And you just hear poof, and garlic powder is just everywhere. I mean, you can't escape smelling like garlic powder. The guy at the market didn't even care. He just thought it was funny. She's furious. Like, that's 24 products of McCormick, and you're going to have to pay with it. You know, I mean, I'm not paying for that. Like, and she took it so seriously. But I will say this for this woman. No, if I had to pick one person I've ever met in my life, ever, to go into a fist fight with, she's it. I've never met a tougher human being in my life than my buddy's mother. In fact, one time, same kids, her two oldest sons, JJ and Michael, and myself, same type of deal. I forget what the hell we're stocking. But we were being idiots. We're, you know, instead of just putting it in the crates, we're kind of tossing it around to each other and not harming the product, but just being goofy. And so she comes in the aisle, and she's kind of like dressing us down for it because we're just acting unprofessionally. And some woman, no idea who she was, she's like, you know, we all had the same, we had matching polo shirts on. So this woman knew we all worked together, including with the mother. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't know how you deal with them. They're very nasty boys. Not knowing that two of them are a son, and I'm like an honorary son in that family. I spent so much time there. And without even skipping a beat, as mad as she was at us, she's like, how about I take you outside and I break your face? And it was just like, whoa, like, it's not that serious. I promise it's not. But she was livid. She's like, how could they say that? How could you talk to somebody like that? You know, I'm like, it's not, it's okay. Like, who cares? Like, she's right. We're acting like idiots. You know, she's like, I don't care. She ever says that about my kids again, I'll take her outside. And she was as mad as I've ever seen anybody. And I remember she walked out of the aisle and her oldest son was like, oh my God, she loves us. it was like a revelation. Anyway, yeah, listen, I mean, I've droned on, but it was just, that was growing up. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. I have no regrets. And I look forward to seeing her in a few weeks when I go back to New York.
That's fantastic. Oh, are you going back to New York for just a visit?
I do it every year. My family has my mom's one of five, and when her parents passed away, they left the lake house to the five siblings. And so we go up there, we stay there. This is the longest I'll ever have gone back for. I'm going to go back almost for a month.
Oh my God. Wow.
3.5 weeks. I'll work a little bit while I'm there, but I'm go back, enjoy time, see everybody. I do it every summer, usually for 2 weeks, but this time it's taking a little bit longer.
Okay. Oh, is that usually your dead period, or do we already pass your dead period?
I'm actually going to do it like right when training camp starts. So I'm I'm going on like July 20th, and I'll see everybody on August 13th. That was what worked best for the family because my wife was on leave, maternity leave, and so yeah, it was like, look, this is, and the fan side, it's credit. They're like, hey, don't worry about it. Have fun. Like, all right. So I'll still do my podcast. I'll do my comedy.
Sure.
I'll still cover the league. I'll still be involved. But I will technically be on vacation. I will be writing while I am in the lake and hopefully not getting electrocuted to death.
There you go. By the way, I don't think I've been able to say this to your face. Congratulations on the birth of your daughter, my friend.
Thank you.
Very happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Genevieve, she is 3 months old on July 2nd. So we're excited. She's doing well. And she's got a sister who loves her to death in Maisie. So it's been good. It's been fun. A little sleep deprived, but I'll take it. I'm not whining.
I was going to say, I mean, I've texted you a few times about it, but I don't know if we might have done one, but I don't know if I brought it up. But yes, by the way, I love the name too, Genevieve. Is that like a family name or is that just
one of that? It's not. Neither is Maisie. Steph came up with Maisie out of the thin blue air. I don't know where the hell thin blue sky. I don't know where that came from. And Genevieve, I don't know. I came up with that. I don't know why.
Did you? I like it.
Genevieve Rose. I don't know where that came from. We're Italian, and Maisie and Genevieve are not Italian names. Genevieve is French, and Maisie is like Scottish. So just like the names. Just like them. Although God bless that poor kid, man. Genevieve Verderam. I told my wife, Jesus Christ, just go by Jen. I mean, whatever it takes. You know, I mean, holy crap. So, yeah, that V's and E's. If she can't draw those or she has some kind of a speech impediment early on in life.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh, my goodness. You know, I mean, I'm probably a little young. I don't know if I – at least not in the – I don't know if I should –
I was gonna say maybe you do. You just don't know.
I'm pretty certain I don't. I feel like I would have gotten some sort of call.
It's probably good.
Yeah.
Children are the biggest commitment of a lifetime you could possibly make. But if you want to make that commitment, they are the most fulfilling experience you'll ever have. But if you don't want to make that commitment, don't.
Yeah.
Like my sister doesn't want kids. And I tell her all the time, like, hey, look, you know, she's 5 years younger than me. She's 29. Well, 4.5 years younger, 29. But look. If you don't want them, don't ever let anybody let you feel bad about it. Yeah. Like, don't have kids. That's fine. It's better than being one of these people who has kids because they either feel like they have to or because, you know, all their friends have kids and they want to be part of that. And then there's just shitty parents. Correct. Like, look, there's, you know, people get this whole, like, oh, you're selfish. No. Fuck that. Look, if you don't want to have kids, don't have kids. My wife, love her to death. If she could, she'd have another kid tonight. Okay? I'm not having any more kids. I love my two girls. And
are you done? You're no more.
Oh, I'm done. Yeah, no, I'm done. Like, I'll be very honest. Not to get it too deep in this, but if I knew that if we had one more kid, it would be a boy, I would do it mostly, and for people listening who aren't aware, we lost our son in between our two daughters, okay? He was lost at 18 weeks in utero. So because of that, if I knew that we would have another son, not that he would replace Ben, but to have that father-son bond that I expected to have, and we've talked so much about in the pod, I'd probably do it. I feel like if I had another girl, of course, look, if we did, yeah, I'd love her to death. I would be the father to her that I am to the other ones. But I can't go into it mentally being like, well, I'm really, really, really hoping it's one gender. Because right. Then I feel like you're not fully invested the way you need to be.
And whether, yeah, you, part of you would probably be let down if it wasn't.
Yeah, and I don't ever want to feel like that. Yeah. Like, even though I know in practicality, like when that child, you know, I would love that child unconditionally as I do Maisie and Genevieve. I wouldn't want to feel going into it like I'm really rooting for one side of it. And if it doesn't come up that side of it, there's going to be like a month where I'm like moping around. I don't want to feel like that. I don't want to do that. Plus, you know, could we have another kid in size of the house? Yeah, sure. But like, and kids are expensive. Like they're not cheap. It's a lot of commitment. And I love my kids, but I don't know that I could do three of them. I feel like that would be, they would overrun me at that point. Like Maisie's like having four children. So, I think, yeah, I'm good. My wife, she'd go for it again. I can't do it.
Yeah. Tim Bailey had seven. I'm one of seven. That's too many. Yeah. Well, in his first marriage, he had my two older sisters, and then he had my mom. My mom had four, so me and my three younger sisters. And then in his third, he had my younger brother, and now he's on his fourth, and now I have two step-siblings. So I guess there's nine of us.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's a lot of us.
You know, my parents, it was me and my sister, and that was enough for my parents. And I love Maisie and Genevieve, but that will be it.
Yeah.
That will. Fine. If it's not it, that would be a surprise, and I will be sobbing in the corner because I don't know that I can handle that. I love them to death, but that would be maybe a bridge a little too far.
I think we're gonna have to ask my dad about this. I convinced my dad to be on the show, by the way. I don't know if I told you that.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, that's gonna be something fun. I shot him a text. I was like, hey, I want to do something with you. It might take some talking into. And he's like, just fucking tell me. And I was like, so I told him about the show. He's like, yeah, what the hell? Why not? So that'll be fun. I'm excited about that. I think that's in terms of like everything that we've done together.
How many have you done so far?
You're my third. Okay. And then
Andy Trask was one of them. Who was the other one?
Sean Rossette.
Okay.
So he was my guinea pig to see if this would be worth doing. And no, it went really well. The one with Amy went really, really well. She, bless her heart, man. She rules. I was Amy's so happy. Awesome. Yeah, Amy's great. So that was really cool to do, really big. In terms of like anybody that I've had the opportunity to interview, she's definitely amongst she's the greatest. Awesome. It was great. So yeah, my dad will be on it, and that'll be a fun little thing for him and I to be able to talk about. Because he's, like I said, he's been incredibly supportive of this. Like anytime I don't send him a podcast I do or an article I write, he gets pissed at me. He's like, damn it. Like, put you through school, help let you move in with me. Like, tell me when you do shit. And I was like, all right, fair enough. I'm sorry. Yeah. So anytime that we do stuff, I make sure that I send it to him. And he's very aware of you at this point.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's cool, man. That's cool. One day you get to a point where I'm like, hey, dad, you reached stacked in box this week? You do so much, I can't keep up. My guy. It's okay. I understand.
He does give me that a lot too, because I'll tell him that like I started doing this. He's like, how many places do you write for now? And I was like, it's what I got to do, dad.
Yeah. You know, it's, he's a little bit, he's like, I don't know how you do all this, like all these different pieces, you're in the radio and podcasts. But he listens to every podcast I do, every single one of them. Every single one of them, comments on him. Like he's just like ultra involved in that regard. He has a commute still to work, so he'll sit there and
listen
to him. But yeah, he's
Does he critique you? My dad does.
You know, he did in the beginning. Now I think it's more like, look, you know what? You probably know better what you're doing than I do. Every once in a while, he's like, how about cutting out the profanity here and there. He's like, no, nobody needs to hear you curse. I'm like, people enjoy it. They think it's funny. He's like, yeah, well, I don't stop. But he's okay. You know, he's good about it. He enjoys it. I think for him, it's fun. You know, he loves sports so much, not just football. He loves them all the sports. I think for him, it's just kind of cool to see, like, to have like me at the Super Bowl, you know, or to have, I think, you know, like for him, that's, I think this year coming up in Glendale, he's going to come down for the week and we'll just, you know, he'll hang out because he loves the bird watch and there's a bunch of things down there. He'll do that too, but he'll be able to kind of hang out with me during Super Bowl week when I'm not
that'd
working.
Be cool.
So that'll be fun. Yeah. But I think for him, it's just kind of neat. Like, what'd you do today? I'm like, oh, I interviewed so-and-so. And he's like, that's pretty cool. I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, it's fun or whatever. You know, if I'm in Indianapolis with the combine or, you know, whatever. Like I think for him, it's like a window into the world that he's always loved so much. Yeah. And it's cool for him, I think, a little bit that, like, I am it's a very small little part of it. It's fun. It's, listen, again, kind of coming full circle in the conversation, but, like, what we do for a living, my job, that is not a job. That is not, like, listen, don't tell fan sided. Like, they keep sending checks. But, I mean, I think about that all the time. I'm watching football. I'm talking to people in the league. I'm talking to, you know, whether it be, you know, somebody in the front office or an agent or a player even. Like, it's, like, I'm watching football. Like, if I told 5-year-old me, like, this is what you're going to do for a living. Who the hell could ever argue about that? You know, I think the greatest honor in my life was probably 4 years ago. I got asked by my high school to be the keynote speaker at graduation. And that meant a lot to me going back because my town, look, I love my hometown, Livingston Manor, New York. Love it. And it's thriving right now in a way it never did when I was a kid. When I was a kid, there was not a lot going on in town. A lot of boarded up buildings, a lot of poverty, but the people are amazing. And it's a huge reason I go back every year. I love Livingston Manor, New York. And going back and being able to talk to a class of, I think, literally 18 kids.
Jesus.
I mean, yeah. And talk to them, like, almost personally, you know, because it's such a small class. I mean, like, look, you can live your dreams. Like, you truly can. Like, it doesn't matter where you come from or who, like, it doesn't matter as long as you're willing to work for it. And it's been so fun to be able to go back and see people I went to high school with, and, you know, they know what I do for a living. And some of them are, listen, as far as I'm concerned, way more important and successful. They're teachers, they're nurses. They're so much more instrumental in life than I am writing about a bunch of guys wearing matching uniforms. Okay. But it's funny to see these people who I went to high school with, and they're like, you know, I've been following your career. Like, of course that's what you do for a living. That's all you ever talked about in high school was sports. So of course, like, that, you know, it's fun. I think being able to, you know, come from all that, and certainly my parents were a big part of it, my dad and my mom, but also, yeah, like, just everybody back home, being from such a small town, you're supported by, like, everybody. And that's a really unique thing. And it's something that I really appreciate.
I think the reason that you and I get along really well is because we have a lot, whether you'd like to admit it or not, Matt Verderam, we do have a lot in common. I might wear a little bit more jewelry than you do.
Yeah, it's a shame.
But no, I mean, it was very similar for me. I had a little bit bigger of a class, but it was only 98 kids. It was a small town in Pennsylvania. But I remember my journalism teacher in high school, every time I go back, she, like, just to see, like, my sisters for a little bit or anything, I make sure I visit her, and she will talk my ear off about how awesome it is. Like, oh, I saw you doing this. I saw you do, like, it's
right.
It's genuinely, like, heartwarming to be able to, like, hear that. And with my parents and everything, like, what if they ask me, like, oh, hey, you know, what'd you do? And, like, oh, yeah, I interviewed Ike Taylor today. My father, I remember the exact same thing, the exact thing he said. I told him, hey, I'm interviewing Ike Taylor. He's like, ask him what the back of Larry Fitzgerald's jersey looks like. And I just remember, because I was on the phone with him doing it, and I just busted out laughing. He's like, that son of a bitch almost lost us the Super Bowl. I'll never forgive him. I was like, oh, well, I'll make sure I'll tell him you said that, Dad.
Like my dad with the 71 Christmas Day game, the Dolphins and the Chiefs. Still can't talk about it. It's so annoyed. And years ago, I interviewed Larry Zonka.
And I bet your dad loved that.
I actually did mention it to Larry Zonka. I said, you know, you killed my father. It's 11. And the Larry Zonka's undying credit. He just kind of chuckled. He's like, ah, you got over it. Like, he actually hasn't, Larry.
Yeah, actually, like, you know, funny story.
But you know, it's fun. It's fine. What we, you know, this funny game we watch. It's a sport and it's a game and it's a very serious business. But I think sometimes people forget, like, enjoy it. You know, you get these people who bitch about the fact they got to cover a Super Bowl. It's like, okay, great. Then give up your seat in the press box and let somebody who actually gives a shit do it. Yeah. Like, who are you kidding? Well, your job's that tough because you got to quote somebody and then you got to transcribe it for 10 minutes. Go sit in an attic in Jersey. It's 115 degrees, and you got to wear long sleeves and long pants because you're working with power tools, okay? You go do that and see how that works out. And then come complain to me because you got a 12-minute interview you got to transcribe in air conditioning while you got your AirPods in. I'm sure life really dealt you a bad hand. None of us can complain about this job ever. And I will always feel that way.
I'm glad that we were able to do this. You know, you've been, and you will never accept the praise for it, but I will always praise you for it, because you've lifted me up ever since the first time I reached out to you, and you've always done that. You've always given me time. You've always been there to, you know, anytime I needed you on a show, anytime I wanted you to do something, when I came up with Trivia Bowl, I was like, hey, do you think this would be fun? You come on those whenever I ask you to. You give me a swift kick in the ass whenever I need it. And I appreciate that because I wouldn't be where I am without you. And I hope that you genuinely that you know that.
Well, thank you. I always tell you what I truly feel with this, which is that you do the work. And I think that this is a really interesting format of a podcast. I think it's going to be very successful. You're good at it. I'll listen to it. And it's something that, listen, you know what? You get what you give in life. And you that is also true in work. Like, I firmly believe that you, especially now where there's not just like these three outlets that like dominate life. There's a million ways to, you know, to get paid, to get attention. And I think there's a right way to go about it. There's a wrong way to go about it. Just keep doing what you're doing.
I'll try my best to do that, my friend. Anything you want to plug before we get on out of here? It's almost 11:30 Eastern time as we're recording. At some
point, Genevieve's going to wake up and there's going to be hell to pay, either from her or my wife. So I'm hoping she's still asleep.
Probably both.
No, well, if it's both, I'm going to my neighbor's house for the couch. No, not really. Just stacking the box. You know, podcast on Tuesdays at noon on YouTube. You can check it out wherever you want as well. If you just want to listen to it, you know, iTunes, Spotify, wherever, Google Play. Mondays, Stacking the Box, the written version. It's Mondays at 6 a.m. It comes out. Now, also, by the way, I'll plug this mostly just for fun. If you go to my Twitter feed at Matt Verderam, you can now super follow me.
I saw that you got that.
I don't know, but if you want to super follow me for $5 a month, that's a whole bunch of exclusive crap. So, you know, you get more of me. What the hell? If you don't want to follow me, I'm not going to be one of these people who's like, well, I'm pulling back on my regular Twitter. I'm not going to do that. Like, it's extra. It's some fun. It's a little one-on-one. Right now, I have three today to start things off. So, like, it's a
was today the first day that you got it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, look, I'm not saying the number like to be a braggadocio. I have like 20,500 followers. If I get 50 of those people to super follow me, like, that's a huge win. And look, we will have fun with it. Like, I will have a good time. I'll give you your $5 a month worth. Like, we'll have fun. So if you want to super follow me, go ahead. If you don't and you're like, fuck this guy, I'm not giving him $5 a month. Hey, I don't blame you. I get it. I wouldn't give me $5 a month either. But that's, yeah. Why Twitter did that? No clue. But here we are.
That's hilarious. I love it. Matt, appreciate you, my friend. I'm excited for everybody to hear this and get a little bit more info on you and everything. You can check out, I'll plug my stuff real quick too. by the time this releases, it should be tomorrow, 33rd team piece, comparing Deshaun Watson's situation to those outside of the NFL, whether it be NBA, MLB, international sports. I know that we all love talking about the Deshaun Watson situation, don't we? So that'll be on 33rd team tomorrow. So check that out. And then, of course, if you want to go back and listen to the interviews with Sean Ross Sapp, Amy Trask, Unknown Notes, you can check that out on YouTube. Amy Trask is only a podcast, though, so go listen to that wherever you get your podcast. Pump Fake Pod later this week. And then more of this coming with all of, you know, the people that you know if you watch my content. Ben Raven will be talking about his wrestling career. I cannot wait for that, by the way. That's going to be
Ben Raven in person is like the size of a house.
He's
I don't mean like fat. I mean like he's just
no, he's tall. He's just, yeah.
Yeah, he's huge.
He's like 6'13 or something. Yeah, he's massive.
I'm 6'2. I feel like his child. Unbelievable. Hang out with him and Nystrom. It's like, my God. I mean, Nystrom's not that tall, but it's like you're hanging out with Nystrom's like cut from like a cloth from like 1840. Right? Like he's just like this awesome dude, but he's kind of, you know, if you don't know Thor Nystrom and if you gave one guess, where's Thor Nystrom from Minnesota? Like instantaneously, there's no doubt in the world he's from Minnesota.
Thor does look like the walking embodiment of Minnesota, doesn't he?
It's like you see him, you're like, hey, Thor, what's going on, man? Did you just chop down a tree? Yep.
Sure did.
Nicest guy in the world. Nice. I remember he and I went to St. Elmo Steakhouse in Indy together.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that place is probably taking a hit from the stock market after that. Like, those people, and you've never been there. It's a high class joint. Like, these people aren't like toxic. We got invited. So we showed up and like we were, you know, we got dressed as nicely as we could. But I mean, that place must have been like, seriously? Like we no longer can fancy ourselves as an establishment. Now we're just a joint. It is what it is.
I'm excited to have Ben on. I'm eventually going to need to get Thor on this because that would be just an entertaining as hell hour and a half. Matt Parrino will be on soon. He's got an incredible story in his own right. Love Matt Parrino. So yeah, a lot of fun stuff coming. And then potentially a few players. We're still working out a few of the details on that. So I'll tweet those out when they come. But yes, thank you everybody for listening to No Notes, No Research, just guys talking. Appreciate it. And we'll be back soon.